was just amazing. Thank you so much. Speaking of bravery and courage, I think you're all brave to be here this morning. I was telling Mitzi that if I were not on the bill, I might not be here right now. It would be real easy to step out the door and kind of make other plans at the last minute involving my bed, right? So those of you who don't know me, my name is Anthony Clark. Some people call me the singing storyteller. Mostly I call myself that, but some people call me that. I've been telling stories for about the past 17 years. I've been to libraries, schools, fairs, all over the place. But I've actually been singing longer than that. Many, many, many years I've been singing. Most of that time only in the shower, though. So, raise your hand if you like to sing in the shower. Yeah, I thought I knew you were, for sure. So I'm not going to do any more singing today. I do want to do a story, but I before I do that, I have to say that I have a lot of emotions coming up for me right now. I see this as a great irony that I'm standing here essentially delivering the message this morning, given my religious upbringing, or lack of upbringing, we might say, because growing up, my religion was heathenism. Some of you can relate to that. Seriously, the kids at school would talk about what their religion is, so I went home and asked my dad, what religion are we? He said, we're heathen. I thought that was an option. So every time people would ask me, what religion is your family? Heathen? It kind of embarrassed them a couple times. But literally, where we grew up in the trailer court where we live, my sister and I would run from the church bus every morning. It would come barreling through down the street. We would run and hide behind the bush because my dad told me, you don't want to let them catch you. You don't know what's going to happen to those kids when they get them to church. And so we would watch the kids from behind the bush and kind of feel a little bit sorry for them. I still don't know what happens to the kids when they get them to church. Do we need the microphone a little louder? Okay. Can we turn it up just a little bit louder? So that's basically my history. I had an experience. I never went to church. A friend invited me to vacation Bible camp around third or fourth grade. He was a good friend, so I went. But I didn't know anything about the Bible. There wasn't even one in our house. I didn't grow up going to Sunday school. And on the second day of that camp, they gave us a quiz, a fill-in-the-blank worksheet. Jonah and the blank. I know now that it's whale, but seriously, back then I had no clue. So I thought, what am I going to do? Well, this is vacation Bible camp. If I see a blank, I'll write the word Bible. And that'll probably be right. Jonah and the Bible, right? Daniel in the den of Bibles. Moses parted the red Bible. I thought it was a good plan, but the adult who was in charge of checking it out kind of made me feel ashamed that I didn't know the right answers and kind of made me feel stupid about that. That's a true story. And so I stayed away from church for a long, long time until eighth grade. Another friend invited me to go to his church and check it out one evening. And I said, no, been there, done that. Don't want to have anything to do with that. And he said, well, you'll get a free kite. Kites were my favorite toys, you know, growing up. So I said, sign me up. So when they came to pick me up, my dad had not heard about this plan. So he wanted to know, what denomination are they? And I didn't even have a clue. I didn't care. I just wanted the kite. But I asked the kid, what denomination? Turns out they were Jehovah's Witnesses. My dad put the kibosh on that. I didn't get my kite. But I thought that's basically how it worked. You check out a new church, check out a new religion, you get a free kite. I thought that's how it worked. And so I didn't have anything to do with church until my early 20s. I started looking around at different churches. I visited all kinds of churches, Catholic, Baptist, Lutheran, Presbyterian, everything. And they all had value. But there was something about all of them that there was something I didn't quite like. There was a common thread I noticed. And it wasn't the religion themselves. It was some of the people. And it was this attitude that was sort of like, our way is the right way, everybody else is the wrong way. So basically, we're going to be at the throne of God one day, everybody else is going to be in hell. Some of you have probably encountered that attitude before, right? And I couldn't wrap my head around the idea of a God who just favored one, you know, little group of people. So I drifted away from church again. Then about 17 years ago, I was living in Colombia, I stumbled into Unity Church there. Now, it was a pretty big Unity church. I don't even know how I got there. I think a friend invited me. And I noticed there are all kinds of people in this Unity church. There were Muslims there. There were Jewish people there. I made a Jewish friend at the Unity church. There were Hindus there. There were agnostics. There were even some atheists running around. And a whole lot of people who called themselves Reformed Catholics and Baptists. A whole lot of those kind of people. And there were people from all over the world. Every race was represented. There were gay people, straight people, transgender. And I thought, if this church embraces all of this beautiful diversity, maybe they have room for someone like me, for a heathen who's a little rough around the edges and doesn't know the first thing about the Bible. And so I started going to that Unity Church. And soon after I started, I dropped in the bookstore. And there was a bumper sticker in the bookstore. My favorite bumper sticker of all time. I bought it. It's somewhere. It's not on my car. But in my mind, that bumper sticker summarizes what Unity is about, at least to me what it's about. You might have seen it. I noticed this bumper sticker on a car in St. Charles. It says, God bless the whole world, no exceptions. Have you seen that one before? God bless the whole world, no exceptions. And that's what Unity means to me. And so, for about the past 17 years, I've been going to Unity off and on. And it's always been there for me when I've needed it. And it's always been exactly whatever I needed it to be in that moment. I will say this, though. Even though I've been going to Unity and checking it out for 17 years, I still haven't gotten my kite. So I don't know where I... So before I go into the story here, I just want to ask a couple little favors. First of all, if you could, there are some real quiet parts of this story, and an obnoxious ringtone will just kind of ruin it. If you could take out your device real quickly and just check and make sure it's in the vibrator off position, I'd appreciate that. And the other thing is, I like to begin this story with a breath. It puts us all in the story together. So if you would take a deep breath with me. Let it out slowly. This is my adaptation of a classic story by Oscar Wilde. High above the city, on a tall column, stood the statue of the Happy Prince. He was gilded all over in leaves of fine gold. For eyes, he had two bright sapphires. A large red ruby glowed at his sword hilt. People came from miles around. They would stand there, stare up at him all day. Oh, he looks just like an angel, they'd say. One evening there flew over the city a little swallow who was on her way to Egypt. The other birds in her flock had gone some time before. This little one had dallied behind. And now that the weather was beginning to change, she thought it was time she headed for warmer climes. As she passed over the city, she looked down for a place to rest for the night, and that's when her eyes fell upon the golden statue. She settled between the feet of the prince. She looked up about her and said, "Ah, tonight, I shall sleep in a bedroom of gold." She tucked her little head beneath her wing, and just at that moment, a drop of water fell upon her feathers. Rain, she thought. She looked up in the sky. I didn't see a cloud anyplace. Another drop of water fell upon her wings, and that's when she looked up and saw the face of the prince. And she saw the tears in his eyes. "Who are you?" the bird asked the statue. And the statue said, "I am the Happy Prince." "Happy?" said the bird. "You don't look very happy to me. If you're so happy, why are you weeping like that?" "When I was alive and had a human heart," the prince said, "I lived in the palace of Sanssouci, where sorrow is never allowed to enter. All day long, I played in the garden. At night, I led the dance in the great hall. A lofty wall ran all around the garden. I couldn't see over it. Never dared ask what lay beyond it. Everything around me was so beautiful. My courtiers called me the Happy Prince. Happy I was, if pleasure be happiness. So I lived, my little friend. And so I died. And after I died, they placed me here, high up in this pedestal, where I can look out and see all the ugliness, all the misery that is in my city. And although my heart is made of lead, I cannot help but weep. His heart is made of lead, thought the little bird, and I had assumed he was made of solid gold. I guess it just goes to show you never can tell a person's insides by looking at his outsides. Far away, the statue continued, on the other side of the city, in a poor little house, I see a woman who is weary. Her hands are red, pricked by the needle, for she is a seamstress who toils endlessly to support her young son. At the moment, he is very ill. His fever is quite high. He lies in bed calling out to his mother, asking for oranges. She has nothing to give him but river water. Do me a favor, my little friend. Stay with me for the night. Be my messenger. Take this ruby from my sword hilt. Carry it to the woman. She may sell it and use the money to buy food and medicine for the boy. Messenger, said the bird. But my friends are waiting for me in Egypt right now. Even as we speak, they're flying up and down the Nile, talking to the big lotus flowers. Soon they will begin building a nest in the great temple of Baalbek, while the pink and white doves watch them cooing at one another. I was going to rest here for the night and set out early in the morning. Please, little friend, said the statue. My feet are attached firmly to this pedestal. I cannot move an inch. Stay with me for the night. Be my messenger. Swallow, oh, swallow, lend me your wing. But I need my rest. Swallow, oh, swallow, lend me your wing. The prince's face looked so sad and beautiful in the moonlight that the bird found she could not resist. She flew up and plucked that ruby out of his sword hilt and carried it across the city into the window of that poor little house. She left it where the woman would find it in the morning. And for just a few minutes, she flew around the boy, fanning his face with her wings, cooling him just enough that he was able to get to sleep. When she returned to the statue, she said, "It's a very curious thing. It's so very cold out here tonight. Yet somehow, I feel warm all over." The prince smiled at her and said, "You feel warm, little one, because you have done a good thing." With that thought in her mind, she fell asleep between the feet of the prince, and she slept soundly all night long. Morning came, the little bird awoke early, and she flew around the city, visiting all of its noteworthy sights. Later that day, she returned. She said, "I'm on my way to Egypt now. I very much enjoyed meeting you. I promise I will stop and see you again the next time I come through." The prince looked at her and said, "My friend, I have another favor to ask of you. On the other side of the city, a young man is seated before a table piled high with papers and a tower. He's attempting to complete a play for the director of the theater, but the oil has run low in his lamp. He is weak with starvation. I have no more rubies left to give, but my eyes are made of rare sapphires, which came from India 1,000 years ago. Take one to the young man. He may sell it and use the proceeds to complete his play." "I think I told you," said the swallow. "My friends are waiting for me in Egypt. Oh, it's so cold here right now. And it's so nice and warm in Egypt, with the green palm leaves and the crocodiles lying in the mud, looking lazily all around them. I very much look forward to joining my friends there." "Please, my little friend," said the statue, "stay with me. Swallow, oh, swallow, lend me your wing. But I'm waited for in Egypt. Swallow, swallow, lend me your wing." Well, again, the bird could not resist. She did as the prince asked. She flew up and plucked his right eye right out of the socket, carried it across the city into the window of that tower, leaving it where the young man would find it. When he awoke and found it, he thought it was a gift from an admirer. He was so inspired, he completed that play in short order, a play that would in turn inspire many others for many years to come. And again that night, even though it was so dreadfully cold outside, the little bird fell asleep feeling warm all over. The next morning, she awoke earlier than the previous day. She flew around visiting the sites she had missed the previous day. Then later on, she returned to the prince and she said, "Have you any commissions for Egypt? I'm on my way now." But the prince gave her that look, and she knew what was coming next. "This one is an emergency," he said. "Down there in the streets, I see a little match girl who has dropped her last fistful of matches into the gutter and gotten them wet. When she returns home with no money, her father will beat her. I've seen it too many times before. Take the little girl my other eye. When she takes it home to her father, perhaps he won't hurt her. Perhaps he will treasure her instead." "Well, I could stay with you and help you out," the bird said. "But I can't take the little girl your other eye. For then, well, you would be quite blind. Please, little friend, don't argue with me. Do as I ask. Swallow, swallow, lend me your wing." "But your eye." "Swallow, swallow, lend me your wing." She knew she could not resist doing as the prince asked. This time with great reluctance, she flew up and plucked that other eye out of the socket, carried it down to the streets, dropped it into the hands of that little match girl, who upon catching it cried out, "What a lovely little piece of glass! I'll take it home to Papa. I hope he approves." The bird returned to the prince. He smiled and said, "Thank you so much, my little friend, for all you've done for me. You'll never know what it means. Now you may go on your way and join your friends in Egypt." The little bird shook her head. She said, "Nope, I'm not going." "Not going? What do you mean you're not going? You want to be with your friends. You told me yourself. Why, you must go. It's too cold out. It's dangerous. This is no place for a bird like you to be this time of year." And the swallow shook her head again. She said, "Nope, you're blind now. I can't leave you. So I'll stay with you and be your eyes." And that's what she did. And they whiled away the hours with the bird perched upon the prince's shoulder, talking to him, telling him stories. Stories of all the many things she'd seen in her travels. Stories about the red ibises who stand in long rows along the banks of the Nile, catching goldfish in their funny-looking long beaks. Stories about the Sphinx, who is as old as the world and knows almost everything. Stories about mysteries never even contemplated by the minds of men. The prince listened intently to all of us, and he said, "My little friend, all that you share with me is so incredible. But in my opinion, there's nothing so incredible as the suffering of men and women, and especially of children. There's no mystery so great as misery. Fly throughout my city, little one. Be my eyes. Come back and report to me all that you see." The bird left the prince's shoulder. She flew throughout the city, taking careful note of everything she saw. What kinds of things did she see? She saw the wealthy making merry in their mansions while beggars stood at the gates. She saw orphans standing on the sides of the streets, staring out blankly as if their souls were halfway gone. Beneath the archway of a bridge, she saw two boys huddled together trying to warm one another. She watched as a policeman chased them away. She saw all of this and she saw more. She came back and reported it all to the prince, and he cried out, "I cannot bear the thought of so much suffering right here under my nose. My little friend, I need another favor. Take the gold leafing from my body, every last piece of it. Deliver it into the hands of the poor of my city so that for one little moment of time they may know abundance." She got busy. Piece by piece, she tore the gold leafing from the body of the prince. Piece by piece, she delivered it into the hands of the poor of the city. And every time another man, woman, or child caught a piece of gold falling from the sky, he or she would cry out, "'Tis a gift from heaven. Now we may have bread." Soon after she finished her chore, the snows came, followed by the frost. the deadly frost. The little bird did the best she could, surviving on scraps found outside the baker's door. But at last the day came she knew she could survive no longer. With her last bit of strength, she flew up one last time to the shoulder of the prince. "I must say goodbye to you now," she said. "I'm sorry that I must go. May I kiss your hand?" The prince smiled. He said, "My little friend, I'm so relieved to see that at last you're going to join your friends in Egypt. That's where you belong. This is no place for a bird like you to be this time of year. But you must kiss my lips, for I love you, little one. I'm not going to Egypt," the bird said. "And I love you." And with that, she flew up and kissed the prince's lips and fell dead at his feet. Just at that moment, a loud crack sounded deep within the statue. That lead heart had snapped right in two. It was a dreadfully cold winter. The next day, the mayor of the city came walking through the square, accompanied by his town councilors. He looked up at the prince and he said, What's the matter with the happy prince? Why, he's no longer golden. He's all dull and gray. And what's happened to his jewels? Why, the prince looks quite shabby indeed." "Quite shabby indeed," the councilors agreed. They agreed with everything the mayor said. "And what's this?" the mayor went on. "A dead bird in the streets? There should be no dead birds in the streets of our city. We should pass a law banning dead birds from the streets." The town councilors agreed, and the town clerk made a note of it. The city street sweeper came and scooped up the body of the bird and tossed it out onto the city rubbish heap. At the request of the mayor, a professor of art from the university made an assessment of the statue. After his assessment, the professor declared, "Since the statue is no longer beautiful, it is no longer useful." And they tore down the statue, and they melted it down, and they used the material to make a new statue, a statue of the mayor of the city. But you know, when they were melting down that statue, they discovered there was a part of it that would not melt. Not even in the hottest furnace. That heart, that cracked lead heart, there wasn't a thing they could do with it. So they tossed it out onto the rubbish heap beside the body of the swallow. "That city," God said to one of his angels, "bring me the two most precious things in that city." The angel returned a short time later with that cracked lead heart and the body of the bird. God smiled upon his angel and said, "You have chosen rightly, for in my garden of paradise, this little bird will sing forevermore. And in my city of gold, the happy prince will dance again." The end. Thank you.